Transmission commence in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Level 7.
RandomChatter.com presents
the Strategic Homeland Intervention Enforcement and Logistics Division.
Do you copy?
Perimeter breach.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case files.
Authorizing.
Just call us S.H.I.E.L.D.
Access granted.
Coulson, get back to base.
Welcome back, agents. I trust you've all been suitably briefed on the most recent encounter. We'll be your hosts on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files. I'm Director Shepard.
And I'm Director Stolte, or am I?
Oh.
Oh, did I say that out loud?
Yeah. All right. Hang on, can you stand over in this metal detector for a second while I finish up the
intro? Yeah, sure. What's this?
And you've been authorized to undergo debriefing on the most recent mission from Agent Coulson and his operatives, presented to the public as a dramatic hour-long television series known as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Fortunately, you are cleared to know the truth. Maybe we should change that to a recent mission from Agent Coulson and Director Mace and their operatives. You think he's going to?
Yes, that would be wonderful.
You know, because the team.
We all work together as a team.
It's a team.
So.
Yeah. Team, yeah, team.
That's right.
Oh, boy.
I'm going to go admire this picture of myself for a while. Just give me one second.
Well, so we're back from winter hiatus. Nice early show return. It was pretty cool. It's one of the earlier shows to return from break, at least as far as the stuff that you and I are watching, I guess.
That's right. And not only that, but because they ended with only 8 episodes, first half of the season. We shouldn't have too many breaks in the second half of the season.
We would hope not. Considering they've been doing, you know, we haven't been getting, it seems really early too, right? Because we haven't been getting S.H.I.E.L.D. Episodes after the winter break until February, because the last 2 years have done Agent Carter.
That's right. That's right. Well, they got 14 episodes left in the season. So, you know, 14 weeks from now, this is going to put that would put you very close to the end of the season. So, yeah, I don't think there's going to be too many breaks in there.
Are they going to do a were they doing the musical episode in S.H.I.E.L.D. or is that one of the other shows that we watch? Because, you know,
let's see. I think maybe Flash was in there doing a musical episode.
Yeah.
Supergirl.
Maybe they'll do an episode with all puppets.
I'd like to see.
That would be cool.
Well, like a Rankin Bass thing or.
Well, no, I'm thinking more like the Angel. Angel the Vampire.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Was... Hey, well, you know, Disney owns the Muppets, so they could probably do something like that.
Could you, you know what? Now it's like FMDs. It would be a felt model decoys. And could you just see like a Muppet version? Okay. Listeners out there, I need a Muppet version of Coulson and I need a Muppet version of May. I want to see these.
This is what Radcliffe saw in the Darkhold right there.
Oh, just, my gosh.
Muppet versions of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Josh, get on this. You're an artist.
I like this idea. Okay. All right. We'll work on this.
Do you promise?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I.
All right.
Why wouldn't I?
I know, because when you make a promise, I know I can believe you.
You can believe me.
All right,
yes.
All right. So,
a team that promises is a team. I don't know. Whatever. I promise. I swear. I would never break that promise.
All right. So what episode are we talking about tonight?
Talking about episode 9 of season 4, and it's called Broken Promises.
What?
Oh, dang it.
Oh, wait a second.
Say that out loud again. Darn it. It aired January 10th, 2017.
That sounds weird.
2017.
That sounds
weird. The year of the rooster.
No,
it's nothing to this show. But
I think it's another word
rooster.
For rooster, but I'm not sure if that's it.
Well, this episode, Broken Promises, was written by Brent Fletcher and directed by Gary A. Brown. Now, you know, as Ada was getting dressed for her big day, her hard drive must have been working overtime, you know, just about how to pull off the heist of the season. She's going to infiltrate S.H.I.E.L.D. headquarters and steal the Darkhold to help her to further evolve. Now, Coulson and the team aren't really prepared for her amazing abilities, though, and she quickly takes over and even has her LMD version of May stay undercover to help find what she's looking for. Meanwhile, Director Mace, I can't say his name anymore without smiling. I can't just call him Director Mace. He's Director Mace.
That might be his actual inhuman power.
It could be. It's like, who was it? I don't know, from Get Smart, I think. Jaime or somebody that everybody always liked.
Yeah.
No, Jaime was the, well, Jaime was the LMD.
Jaime was an LMD.
Yeah. All right, anyway, back to S.H.I.E.L.D. Director Mace takes Simmons and Daisy to rescue Vijay Nadir, the brother of the, you know, our good Senator Nadir, who they believe is being held captive in the senator's getaway home. And she's been feeling him out to see what being stuck in a cocoon for 7 months may have done to her dear brother.
Mm-hmm.
But she's not taking any risks, and she's arranged for the watchdogs to take him out permanently when the time is right. Which apparently is, I don't know, after tea, or I don't know how that works.
Yeah, it's like, let's go for a walk. That was the clue. Let's go get him.
Could the clue not have been, take him out from the window while we're sitting on the patio? I don't know, maybe not. Vijay's pretty sure, though, that he's convinced her that he's totally normal. But when Mace shows up with his team, then the Nadirs leave together because, you know, turns out he's really not normal. But I'm pretty sure that that escape's going to result in some really good, you know, brother-sister bonding time.
Yep.
Don't you think?
Siblings in the Marvel Universe always do so well.
Oh, yeah, I never thought of that. Now, back at HQ there, Fitz and Radcliffe try to take back control of the base by way of a digital backup. Mac and Yo-Yo go on the assault, and Coulson hangs out with Fake May in a locked room. It all seems to be going downhill with no chance of success for the good guys when Mac's shotgun axe separates Ada from her problems. That seems that S.H.I.E.L.D.'s LMD problems are now over.
Yay.
However, we soon discover that there's another Ada.
Ooh.
Fake May is watching Coulson carefully. Real May is being held hostage, and it was actually Radcliffe behind the whole plot.
Yoinks. Wow. I thought this episode was going an entirely different direction, and they surprised me on a number of fronts here.
I am with you. That is exactly where I was by the end of the episode.
But it was between all the shocks, it was also probably the funniest episode I've seen. Mac was, I think I texted you, Mac was firing on all cylinders, you chuckleheads. It was just, I really enjoyed what they were doing to his character here.
Yes, it was a banter buffet, you know?
A banter buffet, yes.
Yes. But it was fun.
Pros,
it made it,
you might add, right?
I like that. That's going to be the title of my next book. It was a good little dose of humor amidst some nice dramatic tension. And I always like that balance.
So do you think it was balanced? Do you think it was equally balanced between all that?
I thought there were some times when the humor went a little above and beyond for those particular characters.
Okay.
But as far as the balance in the show, I thought it worked well.
Do you think that's just because we get humor situations, like sometimes Fitz will do something and, you know, realize he's like said something inappropriate or whatever. And it's funny to us, but it's not like the character trying to be funny. And in this episode, we really were getting characters that were, I think Mac was trying to be funny as in character, you know, to actually probably to impress Yo-Yo.
Oh, I see. He was a little flirting action,
mm-hmm.
Huh?
Yeah, he was displaying his plumage.
He doesn't have a lot of plumage. He's got a nice,
yeah.
he's got a nice smooth dome. I find it very appealing.
What was it? You said you want to be just like Mac, except you had one problem.
I do. Yeah. Yeah. I'm just. Well, what did I say my problem was? I couldn't remember. I don't have a shotgun axe.
I thought you were going to say you didn't have a shotgun axe. I thought it was I think you said it was the muscles or something like that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's the only thing that's different between me and Mac is the muscles.
Yeah. So that was – yeah, I think that's what you said here. Anyway, a couple pieces of news we got. The continuing saga of the Season 3 Blu-ray is that there is no Season 3 Blu-ray for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as of yet. No, not listed on Amazon.
I find that to be a very consistent, boring storyline.
It is.
Still not out.
I mean, it's... you know what? I feel they're just trying to lull us into a false sense of security because I feel like there will be a surprise. Like, it'll be one of those third act surprises where, you know, a character who we assumed was dead pops up alive and we're like, no way. You know, I don't buy this. And then we buy it anyway. Yeah, Blu-ray.com, Blu-ray.com, I believe it is, doesn't even know when the date is. There is a season 2 of Agent Carter that is listed, and actually there is a Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. season 3, both on the UK site, but there is not a US version at this time still, which is weird.
At this point, I feel like we're going to get the season 4 Blu-ray before the season 3 Blu-ray.
It's got to be like a rights issue, you know, maybe with something that happened with an actor that was a guest or some incidental music or something. Well, no, because actually if it's out in the UK, I guess rights can be addressed differently in different regions, you know, for like who needs to get paid for, you know, whatever. So we'll keep you apprised of any changes we hear on this, but I think I'm just going to let it lie for now. If you don't hear from us, we don't have any news on it. The producers had an interview right before the season, the year premiere here of the LMD storyline, and they indicated that, as you mentioned, there's only been 8 episodes, which leaves about 14 left in the season. They indicated there would be a third storyline this year. So LMD will not be the final storyline for the year. So I'm assuming it's going to be between 6 and 8 episodes. You know, it could be 7. And then do another 7 episodes, but they will do another storyline in the back half of the year. So that's pretty cool. And anyone's guess as to what it could be, we haven't heard. You know, it's kind of early to hear if shows have been renewed. Even though CW has renewed like half a dozen at least of their shows, I think, plus talked about some new stuff they're bringing out. ABC probably won't let us know for another 2 months, I'm guessing, on certain shows. And we still may not know about S.H.I.E.L.D. for a while due to the Inhumans movie and TV series that are coming next year. So that could kind of, you know, we've talked about this a little bit on our special that we had last year. It could throw a wrench in the works there. But there was a casting announcement this week that points to a number of different Inhumans characters. Now, the names of the characters they list are what do you call them? They're red herrings. Like, you know, it says you know, like Monica, but the description of who the character is and what this character is about is obviously like Medusa. All the characters were named with the first letter of their Inhumans counterpart. So it looks like we are getting the full-on royal family treatment with the Inhumans, including Black Bolt, Medusa, and Maximus the Mad, Triton, Gorgon, Karnak, and Crystal. And obviously they are not casting for Lockjaw at the time, whether they need, you know, to have him in there or if he's just going to show up. That would be pretty cool, though.
Why do they even bother, you know, masking it like that?
Probably, I mean, just for casual viewers. I don't know, because fans are going to find stuff out. And I don't know. You know, I would think it would give people who are reading for these, you know, the actors who are coming in. It's like if you knew, oh, I'm going in to try out for this part of Black Bolt. Well, maybe they can kind of – maybe they're fans and they can figure it out. But, like – you wouldn't want to go in and, like, you know, be all chatty Cathy, even though it says he's kind of the strong silent type, you know, like that was in the casting notice. You would think it would give the actors a chance to do a little research, you know, on a character. I don't know. I think it's just they're, you know, they're just trying to keep it to a minimum. But, you know, anything that's coming out of Marvel.
I suppose at the very least, it gives them the opportunity to take out a character or change a character out, you know, if they need to, and still say, no, we never said that character.
Plausible deniability, right? That's what it is. That is true. Yeah. So anyway, so we've got that coming. I mean, you know, they're casting now. It's the movie portion of it's going to premiere in September. So they will be, shooting this, I'm guessing, within the next couple months here. So a lot of exciting stuff to look forward to. We've got, as far as Marvel fans are concerned, we've got Iron Fist coming out in March on Netflix. Spider-Man Homecoming coming out in, I think it's July. August has got the Guardians of the Galaxy, and then I think Thor Ragnarok at the end of the year, too. So
wow.
So with the Inhumans, I mean, we've got a ton of... Oh, and Entertainment Weekly was reporting today that Netflix's Defenders, which is the team-up of all the street-level heroes, is due summer 2017, not later. Usually
oh,
it's,
already?
It's fall, yeah. And they had a cover. They have a cover story on their new issue coming this week with all four Defenders on it. Luke Cage, Daredevil, Iron Fist, and Jessica Jones. So I'm very excited for that. I'm really excited for Iron Fist and the Defenders team up. So should be cool. All right, but
wow, you're gonna have to really schedule your year out this year because there's a lot of really good stuff.
Like a Star Wars film at the end of the year and Star Wars convention in the middle of the or early in the year, first quarter here or second quarter, I guess. So, all right, well, let's talk about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because that's what you and I are getting paid to do here.
That's right.
So, Broken Promise is the name of the episode. So, let's just start out really obviously. Whose promises were broken? There was some discussion on the episode. What did you pick up on here?
Well, the main one that was, I guess, kind of obvious was the Nadir siblings.
Mm-hmm.
They talked about, so I really appreciated the way the writers set up this backstory for BJ and his sister.
Yeah, right.
And that was, I'm trying to remember, was that the very first scene of the episode? No, the very first scene was Ada.
The very first scene was Ada. This was the scene right after the title card with,
right.
We saw the mom, I'm assuming it's their mom.
Yeah, I would assume so too. You know, it would somebody of Indian descent, and you know, kind of dressed in the a very nice dress, and you could hear birthday music slowly playing in the background, and then an explosion.
Yeah.
So you kind of set up the premise of the emotional trauma that these this brother and sister have experienced, and then you find out later that it was all because of the attack on New York. So, from the Avengers movie.
Yeah. Which I can, I haven't heard this, but I could understand why people might be upset by that. It's like, God, you keep going back to this. Like, they're always referencing this. Well, if this was the universe you lived in, that was kind of your, you know, the world changing, right? That's the 90 degree turn from every,
oh
there's some
gosh.
Weird stuff going on. And all of a sudden,
this is huge.
Aliens attack New York. I mean, it's 9/11 to a, you know, new height.
And if you think about our culture in our society, huge events like that, you know, Pearl Harbor, 9/11, the space shuttle disaster, those things influence individuals for many, many years and even for generations.
For lifetimes,
in some
yeah.
cases, yeah. And so you, of course, that would be referenced. Now, I mean, they even reference it in the movies. That's one of the things they listed in the origins of the Sokovia Accords. So
right.
This is – and I actually am kind of digging the way that attack in the big Avengers movie, which was kind of the – I don't want to say like the main movie that –
it was the first tentpole movie that they put up for the franchise because it took all their single characters
yeah.
and brought them into, you know, a big film. And now we've got a lot of other films. You know, Captain America Civil War has a lot of characters and Guardians of the Galaxy has a lot of characters. But before
sure,
that, it was always
sure.
just everybody was on
it
their own.
Certainly wasn't like the biggest. I mean, like the first big Marvel movie because there were some before that setting it up.
Sure.
But yeah, and I really like how in these TV series, including the Netflix ones, they reference that because it has influenced where these characters are going, and it definitely would in the real world.
Right.
So
a seminal
event. This was a definitely. And for the Nadirs, I thought, what a interesting storyline to put them on, and it really explained why they and people like the Watchdogs have the attitude that they have, which unfortunately is a very realistic attitude in the world.
Yeah. Well, and this, so their I guess their dad had died previously, from what I understood. And then they had their mom, and she died during the Chitauri attack on her birthday too. So, I mean, it's like, that's, you know, that's got to be really traumatic for everybody involved. So, Ellen, and it sounds like Vijay to an extent, though the way Ellen was talking, I kind of wonder if Vijay really ever made this promise. But basically they said Ellen was saying that the alien attack was the first step, and then the inhuman infection is like this alien plague. That's like the second step for these aliens to take over the planet. And they had made a promise to each other that if either one of them was affected, the other one would do the right thing. And I kind of got the feeling like she was probably the one that came up with that. By the way, yeah. She's the senator for New York. If nobody realized that, there's a brief shot of her door or the plaque outside her door, and she is the senator for New York. So that would make sense why she is so militant about this, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, because it was on her,
yeah,
on her turf. But I, you know, I'm kind of,
I agree with you. It seemed like I think he probably made the promise, you know, and agreed with her, but at the time thinking, well, hey, you know, this is never going to affect us. I don't have to worry about it.
Sure.
'Cause it's not going to happen.
Sure.
And I think he even felt that up to the point where he first discovered his powers. I really truly think he didn't feel,
right.
He felt as if he had fought it off.
That he had beat it, right, because he had fought for 7 months or whatever, and it's like, that just is a ridiculous amount of time. Obviously, it didn't take or whatever, right?
Yeah. I was a little shocked to discover that he was aware. He was conscious during those 7 months, or maybe not conscious, but aware of being in the cocoon.
Yeah, well, because Simmons was detecting, like, a heartbeat that, you know, when she started talking to the cocoon, it would, you know, everything eased, right?
Mm-hmm.
God, that's just horrible.
Yeah, but, and I know, I can't even imagine. This is the kind of thing that would make my father have a panic attack because he's so claustrophobic.
Oh, jeez.
So.
Yeah. So, right. So there was this promise that, I don't know if it, well, I guess the question is, did she break her promise or did she keep it? Because it seemed like she broke her promise there because she told the watchdogs to back off. But
what would the promise have been then?
Well, the promise was that they would do the right thing, which was, I believe, code for, you know, the one would, you know, one sibling would kill the other sibling, you know, or, you know, put them out of their misery or whatever.
So she broke the promise initially.
Yeah.
When she told the watchdogs not to not necessarily, because even he didn't believe he had changed. Even he didn't believe he'd been infected or was an inhuman. So she wasn't really breaking a promise. And I think he kind of convinced her, you know, that that he wasn't.
Those weren't just like crocodile tears she had. Do you think she was really believing him, that he was believing himself, that he didn't have powers,
oh, sure,
and all that?
I think she was upset the whole time, but
well,
her,
yeah,
prejudice, her hatred of anything alien, anything inhuman, was stronger than a, I don't want to say a love for her brother, because I think she loved her brother, but a compassion for her brother being in this state.
I don't know. I don't have siblings, so you'll have to answer for me on this one. But uh-huh. Like, I don't know what would make you want to, like, really kill your. I mean, I'm sure there's times where you're like, oh, I could kill my brother, but not really kill your brother.
No. And if my brother's listening, absolutely not. I would never. No. No.
Okay.
No. I do have siblings, and I can't speak to that. I mean, they're really, I can't imagine anything, but again, her prejudice was taken. It was stronger.
I know. Well,
her hatred.
It shows how screwed up she is. I mean, that's just,
oh yeah, big time.
That's hate. I mean, it's more than hate.
It is hate. It's prejudice. I mean, and that's the ugly form that prejudice takes, is that it can blind you to compassion and love and kindness and really just logical behavior. That's my opinion.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, I'm no expert, but
no, that's not what prejudice does, Josh.
No,
prejudice is
so?
Fine.
Okay. Oh, sorry.
It's a healthy emotion that everybody should feel at some point in their life. And sarcasm. All right. So that's good. I mean, that is a and so really she didn't break a promise there, and in the end she really ended up keeping the promise, which is horrific. I in my opinion. There was one other promise that I saw that was overt in the episode. You know, now, I won't say it's as blatant. It was relatively quick in passing. But Fitz is trying to basically talk Ada down at the end when she is confronting them in the hallway before she lost her head, Highlander style. And he's like, everything will be fine, I promise. And of course, no, everything will not be fine, Fitz, Leopold, as it were. So, you know, that's kind of a broken promise. But I think, you know, there's a lot of other, what is a promise but a word of trust between two people. And obviously, Radcliffe has broken the trust with the team. I mean, I want to get into that more. There's a whole bunch of stuff to talk about with Radcliffe. Director Mace is talking with Daisy about how their team trust has been, you know, eroded, but he hopes he can work on that. So there's that trust. But then there's also this weird stuff going on with this Hero of Vienna stuff. And I think we're going to get a little bit more about this next week, but I don't know. He was really downplaying it. And I liked the scene where Daisy's like, no, you don't get to downplay this when you have, you know, a framed picture of this photo op on your desk. I mean, that's ego. That's huge ego. And why?
Oh yeah.
I mean, I don't know. It's like, I would, you know, I have like awards and stuff I've won, or, you know, certificates and stuff around my office and things like that. You know, stuff I get recognition from my company and stuff like that.
Just keep your head big. Is that what?
It's just, I got to keep it the same size it always is, you know. I
mean,
it's just,
oh, okay. Gotcha. Yeah. Just, yeah.
But, you know, I think having like, well, first off, I think it's weird to have pictures of you in your space, like in your desk. Like if it was a picture of me with somebody else or with my wife, that might be one thing, but like, you know, it'd be like if, I don't know. I don't even know. I don't know what a good example is. It's just weird.
No, I do know what you mean. As a teacher, we get pictures taken of ourselves every year, you know, and the kid, like individual pictures for the yearbook, mm-hmm. and things like that. But,
you hand them out to the kids?
Teachers, well, the kid,
here's one for you. Stay cool.
No, but I do. I get a free package of these pictures of myself that are, you know, school pictures. And I have 20 packs of these things just sitting in a pile because I don't know what to do with them. My family doesn't want, you know, school pictures of a 45-year-old man. So.
It's a range of ages. Josh, bring him to the celebration this April in Orlando, and
I sign him, pass him
out. It's like you know, Director Stolte collect the entire set.
Oh, geez, they're so horrible too. They got that cheesy school smile. But I know I work with teachers. Or maybe I should say I worked so I don't get in trouble, but who hang them up in their classroom?
I'm watching.
I don't know. That would make me uncomfortable.
But looking at the, if you go back and look at the photo, and I'm going to put a copy of the photo up from this that we saw in this episode. We saw it a couple episodes ago as well. So I may have previously posted it, but I'll put it up on our Facebook page. it's a weird picture because, you know, so it's been, he's been called the hero of Vienna. So that would be from the bombing of the Vienna, UN from Captain America Civil War. And, supposedly he saved a bunch of people or somebody or, you know, one person. And there's this picture of him where he looks like he's kind of protecting this woman that's fallen down. But I will posit that the, his body language could be read a couple different ways. Like right now it looks like he's protecting, but it also could be like, oh my gosh, I'm here. Everybody back away. Like I've done something wrong. You know, I mean, I think there's obviously more to the story because they've,
I think so
been
too.
Going on with this. So I think there's a, there's like a broken promise, a broken, you know, an erosion of trust, there. So now,
well, you can't have the erosion of trust, not with the team.
No. And who puts motivational posters in the bathroom, by the way? That is just going too far. You know, it's cool to have them in the break room. That is expected. Maybe put some in the hall, but
I don't read the ones in the break room.
the ones in the break room, it's more, what did the one, there's one that we keep seeing in the break room that, it's like a blue circle, you know, it's like, you know, you're, you know, work with your team or something like that. I can't remember what it says.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So,
well, as long as he doesn't start putting, you know, inspirational urinal cakes in the,
with the little shield logo on them. this was Agent Carter's. So before we get into talking about some more stuff with the Nadirs and with Radcliffe and Ada, something came up, and this really stood out to me the first time I watched the episode. Both Shockley and Ellen, the senator, refer to a character called the Superior.
Now Shockley's the watchdog.
Shockley's the watchdog guy, right. Who by the way, is played by John Piper Ferguson. And I recognize the name, but I didn't recognize the guy. But I'm like, wait a second, I think that's who they're talking about. He is known to me and probably many other people as Pete from Briscoe County Jr., which is an old Fox show from the early 90s with the guy with the chin, Bruce Campbell.
Bruce
Campbell was in Briscoe County Jr. And Pete was kind of the recurring antagonist who was a little simple, but you never touched Pete's piece. Anyone touches Pete's gun, he just went completely nuts. So that's what I remember this guy from. So anyway, Ferguson talks about calling the Superior, and I don't know of a character in the Marvel Universe called the Superior, but this is obviously a code word that they're using for the boss. So my question to you is, who do you think they are referring to? Now, according to Shockley, the character of the Superior is a he. They did use the male pronoun, but actually both he and Senator Nadir did use the male pronoun when referring to this character, but any thoughts one way or the other on that from anything you know about the Marvel Universe or anything?
On who the Superior is?
Yeah.
No. Based on what we know, I just have no idea.
So my first thought, we know, well, so Nadir is obviously working with the watchdogs, like she apparently is employing the watchdogs. So that may be where they're getting a lot of their information from. Okay. You know, what they were doing in the earlier half of the season and last year, she still has a lot of money coming through for stuff. I mean, there's this, they had that whole place set up for, with the doctors that were investigating, her brother, when he was still in the cocoon.
Uh-huh.
Which I don't think the watchdog are funding. So I think there's money coming down from some other source, maybe through the senator. General Talbot was mentioned in this episode. And we know that he, you know, is kind of, he runs the show from the military standpoint, along with the general from General Ross from Civil War with Sokovia Accords. Like, everything has to go through kind of the military for that. So there's a potential that it's someone, you know, it's Talbot or someone like that, you know, in a position of power. It also could just be a character that we don't, you know, we haven't been introduced to. Now, I didn't think about this until you were talking about the prejudice that Ellen was feeling and just how strong her prejudice is, right? Because, I mean, she's not just anti-inhuman. She is capital anti-inhuman. I mean, she is very, very vehement about this. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, for sure. She's like human supremacist.
Right. Now, there is a character in the Marvel Universe, a really awesome character called the Hate Monger, who has a superpower that actually he incites racism and fear and anger and...
that's like the worst power ever.
Well, I guess it depends on what you want to do. He's very much like the G. Gordon Godfrey character from Glorious Godfrey from the DC's New Gods. He's, you know, usually depicted as his true look, I think, is kind of a hooded, you know, Klansman looking character. But I think they did some retroactive stuff where, like, he actually was Hitler for one point in the comics or something like that in one of the old Fantastic Four things. But basically, he, you know, he gives speeches and he just basically can turn anybody against anything. So that would be given the state of the world and the things that they're discussing, which seem to relate to a lot of social issues that are. You know, happening in the real world, I think that might be a really interesting character to bring in and a direction to go. I'd be interested to see what was happening with that. Or it could just be
intriguing,
you know, some ex Hydra AIM person or something like that.
Do you, I don't want to spend too much time on this because there's so many cool things to talk about, but just as you were saying that, do you prefer when they use comic characters, no matter how obscure, rather than creating somebody completely original?
They've created a lot of original characters, and they've also done a lot of characters from the comics. Now, I like the mix that they're doing. I would like to see some other comic book characters in there, but I think they're doing it. I think the way Marvel does it is pretty smart. You know, they take a character and they go, well, we want to make it kind of like this, but they, you know, they're never beholden to the character from the page. So when they like create Obadiah Stane in the Iron Man films, they aren't just going to take the character directly out of the comic and say, well, this is who the comic says he is. They're like, this is the kind of character we like, and we're going to take the attributes that we enjoy and that will work for us and tell a good story. That's the primary way it is, tell a good story. And we'll take those things. Whereas like with some of the CW stuff and with some of the DC movies, it seems like, oh no, this is the character that we've got, so they're just going to take it, and they try to take a two-dimensional character and turn it into a three-dimensional, you know, character for the film, which I would say that does not work all the time. So I like the mix. Okay. Though I would like to, you know, Graviton, I'd like to see him come back. You know, I wouldn't mind seeing like the Taskmaster or some of the you know, other characters. I think that would be fun because they would put their own spin on it. So
sure. Okay. Anyway.
Yeah. All right. So, well, let's talk a little bit about, let's just do a little bit of VJ here. So, do you think he's really dead, I guess, I don't know if that's a question because it seems kind of obvious what's going on.
But. Yeah, it does seem kind of obvious. I mean, I would say, I will say, how about this? I'll say he'll be back. He might be dead, but
oh.
I think he'll be back.
Okay.
Yeah, that was an interesting twist that I did not see coming.
So you spend 7 months in a cocoon. You don't mm-hmm. really seem to have a power, at least that you're aware of. He's put in a very stressful situation. The power seems to be like a reflex that comes out. I'm assuming it's like, it seemed to be super speed of some kind. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, almost like yo-yo, except with not necessarily with his whole body. You know, like his reflexes were just super quick.
Yeah, because he didn't seem to be like running around. It was just he could stand in one spot and dodge things.
Yeah.
So, and then
that's his name. That's his name, Dodge.
His Dodge
superhero name, Dodge.
And then that would be a horrible superhero name. It's like, you know, Ram Tough. That's Chevy though, isn't it? Or Ford?
Yeah,
I don't know. Sorry. I don't know American cars. So he gets shot, thrown from a plane. Like I figure they would check to see if he was dead, but you know, who knows? Or not thrown from a plane, thrown from a helicopter. He's bleeding out. So it wasn't too long after he was shot. And then he cocoons up again. Like, we have not heard about this in the Marvel Universe, an Inhuman that goes through a transition phase and then goes through another transition phase, unless his real power is some kind of cellular regeneration. And he's, you know, if anytime he, quote, dies, he goes into a cocoon and comes back.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I hadn't considered that. Like, so maybe he had died the first time something happened, but then he got in the cocoon form.
Ooh, yeah, maybe he had died, and that's why he was in the cocoon for so long, because he was regenerating or something. And the fact that they're referring to it as a cocoon, you know, it does really give you that more of a metamorphosis metaphor.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. Surprised that he, you know, made a new cocoon. We haven't seen that from anybody yet so far. But I'm wondering when he comes back if he'll have different powers, if he'll have the same, more enhanced powers, and like you said, maybe that is his power.
Yeah.
But I want him to come back. I don't know when I want him to come back, you know, because we know there's going to be a third storyline. So if that'll be part of that, I really like the way they transitioned from Ghost Rider into LMD. It was seamless. Yeah. I mean, it just worked perfectly.
Yeah. Oh, no, I think he'll probably be back still in this storyline. I don't think they're done with him. That's my opinion. He'll come back as a beautiful butterfly. So the other question that I have then, because in my experience, the people who are the most opposed to individuals or lifestyles are ones that have, you know, inklings towards that lifestyle or person or something like that. So I'm wondering, is Ellen actually an Inhuman?
I really like that you brought that up, because the Watch Dogs brought that up as well. And we don't know the situation that occurred to turn him or to cocoon him, right?
Yep.
To turn him into an Inhuman. It could have been something that happened to both of them at the same time. And maybe that's why she decided to not have them take him out. That could be.
And she's really exercising her control over them, you know, at the end. Never question me again. And there's obviously there's some tension between Shockley and Nadir that's pre-existing, more than just was in this episode, I think.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, she kind of freaks me out just because of her hate. I mean, guys like Shockley are just atrocious, because it's just right out there. I mean, you know exactly who they are. It's on the surface.
Mm-hmm.
But she's very devious about what she's doing. And I mean, she's a political figure, you know, she's out in the open. And so not everybody's fully aware of exactly what she's capable of.
Mm-hmm.
So she scares me even more.
Now, you brought up a point here in our notes. when we're talking about the inhuman prejudice here, that Mac also seemed to have a robot prejudice. Now, my question back to you is really, is it a robot prejudice if it's accurate about killer robots? I mean, honestly, in the Marvel Universe, there is not a good track record of having robots. Now, I think, you know, a lot of people thought Iron Man was a robot to start with, and there were some problems with the armor when in Iron Man 3, when that one guy got a hold of it and kidnapped the president, you know, and then Ultron, obviously, that's still pretty big on everyone's mind. So why wouldn't Mac be prejudiced against robots? And is it okay to be prejudiced against robots? There was a lot of discussion by Radcliffe about this with Fitz.
You know, this is a huge discussion. But any kind of a prejudice, I think, is judging something as a group, you know, for specific behaviors that not everybody in that group would necessarily exhibit. Now, the one thing that we thought may have been happening with Ada, and this is debatable for sure, is that she was becoming sentient. She was becoming intelligent.
Right.
Self-aware, I guess, however you want to describe it, which may or may not have actually been happening. But
right. Okay.
We're gonna put
that in the parking lot. We'll be right back to that.
Yeah, for sure. If it is, right, is that something that you should be open to accepting? Mm. And just because, okay, the one thing that kind of triggered this thought about Mac was that he kept comparing this to movies.
Yes.
Which in a lot of ways worked. You know, worked for humor. I also thought it worked.
It's a good shorthand, I mean.
It is, yes. It does happen so often, especially in the Marvel Universe. It was a good way to tell the audience, look, we're very aware that this kind of thing has been done before. And, yeah, you know, we're hoping that we do it differently and that you're interested in it, which I am, very much so.
Yeah.
But he said it – but he was comparing these to fictional events.
Yes.
You know, which – did he mention Ultron?
Ultron was not mentioned, and actually, Derek pointed that out to us on our Facebook in our Facebook feed.
That's right. That's right. He didn't even mention things that did actually happen. So, I mean, to me, that's judging someone or something on some not very ethical reasons.
Hmm. Okay.
So that's why I kind of considered a prejudice.
No, I mean, you know? And that's fair. And kind of getting more into the next part of the topic where Radcliffe was saying that, you know, she's becoming, you know, aware. And I don't think he used the word sentient. And they never mention the word AI. They talk about androids and they talk about life and consciousness, I think. You know, and that so she's becoming more, you know, self-aware and stuff like that. And wouldn't, you know, he's like, wouldn't it be, you know, murder? Wouldn't we be murderers if we killed her? Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, Siri is pretty dang aware, but, you know, I don't feel. I mean, she's not AI though, and I would not.
No.
You know, but I would not feel remorse if I destroyed my iPhone. I mean, I'd be really upset because it's expensive, but which Ada can only be that much more expensive, I guess. I don't know. I think there's a lot of interesting discussions there about AI that they kind of got into. I mean, I really think there's a lot good discussion on this in Age of Ultron.
This is a cool topic. I mean, this is a cool topic, an ongoing discussion.
Yeah, yeah.
And since they're going to be doing LMDs for a while, I would love to come back to this periodically.
I think we'll have to.
See if we can – oh, yeah. See if we can add any new insight to it.
So as you pointed out, like, was Ada really getting that sentience? That was one of my questions. Does was Ada Mark One? That's what I'm going to call the one that lost her head. She's Mark One, and the one at the end of the episode was Mark Two, right? I'm guessing the next model.
All right, to finish your thought, I want to say something about
that. Was she programmed to say all that stuff by Radcliffe? Was she not really sentient? Did the Darkhold not really affect her?
See? I'm wondering that as well. I'm actually even wondering if that was Ada Mark One, or if that was Ada Mark Two will use her to try to get the Darkhold while so I can preserve Mark One. Or does it matter? Was it just another LMD body, but he uploaded the exact same consciousness or programming into it?
Right, exactly. And I mean, with these storylines, and we know Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. likes to pull fast ones on us. So I'm really trying to think ahead on all. I'm trying to get ahead of them here. So now I'm like, well, maybe that's not really Radcliffe anymore.
Oh, that's an interesting thought.
Maybe May's not the only one that is an LMD on the team. She's the only one we saw. But there are other, I mean, in that room, there are other doors. I mean, it wasn't in this episode. It was, you really couldn't tell, but I think it was in the end of last year, or the end of the episodes last year, where we saw May was in one cubicle, but there was another like door looking thing next to that. So, you know, how many does he have? When Ada was making, I was almost wondering, did Radcliffe know about May? But they revealed that at the end, because Ada was making the brain, you know, after reading the Darkhold, but you know, we don't know that was necessarily May's. It could have been somebody else's, or
could have been Radcliffe's. Maybe she replaced Radcliffe. The one thing I noticed in that one scene way back when she was making that brain was that Radcliffe was kind of in the other room around the corner or something, apparently, you know, drinking and unaware.
Yes.
He now it appears that he probably was very aware, or there was something else weird going on, but. My prediction is that he is not an LMD, that the Darkhold really kind of warped him, even with that minor look at it, the way that it did Ghost Rider's uncle, right?
Uh-huh.
He got all these kind of wild ideas about how to use it and how to use his LMDs for that purpose and how to, you know. So that would fit what the Darkhold has done to people that we've seen so far.
And as my friend pointed out, he was never really on our side to begin with. I mean, he was doing these wild experiments ostensibly at the under Hive's control. But, I mean, he was wanting to do all this weird body modification stuff before Hive got a hold of him. So now just to have that next layer, you know, stripped away or given to him by the Darkhold – he's evil genius 101 right there.
For sure.
So, and then my other question is, does Maybot know that she's an android?
That's a good thought.
Yeah, she has that great line. She says, "You ever feel like you're living someone else's life?" And she didn't, you know, she was going to attack Ada. She did not seem to know the difference. That's a pretty good copy of a brain if it doesn't realize that it's not – like, how do you know you're not – I mean, this is the whole, like, question of, like, dozens of other movies, you know, Matrix and all that kind of stuff. How do you know that you're not you? Like, you know, what – how can you experience something that's not in your body, you know, within your body? You have nothing else to base it on. So
yeah, that's a good question. I guess you just get yourself a Voight Kampff machine and see what you can find.
So you know what a tortoise is? Same thing. Yeah. So
nice. I don't think May does know she is an LMD. It seemed that like they had pretty good control. It fascinates me that she knows so much about May's personal thoughts and feelings, or at least it appears that she does.
Yeah.
Either that or she's really good at faking it.
Right.
But of course we know that was Radcliffe's, one of his goals with Ada, you know, making the LMD and emulating emotions and things.
Right. Right. So yeah, a lot of questions there. And I'm kind of curious if we're ever going to see the agent that specializes in making items like the Darkhold disappear. I was kind of thinking, oh, Doctor Strange, but he's not an agent. I mean, he wouldn't be an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. So I'm kind of interested to see if we'll ever, you know, see more of that. A lot of good stuff here. I mean, I think, you know, Ada kind of seems to force Coulson to start destroying the cameras in the room so that he, you know, has this false confidence that he's not being observed. But, of course, he's being observed by the one thing that he realized that he can't realize is observing him, you know, with the May LMD.
I think I could be wrong about this, but it almost seemed like maybe Ada put some kind of spy device camera thing in May, and that's what she was doing when she kind of cut her head. I don't know if it was that or if she was just trying to make it look like she had been attacked.
That was my question, because there was some blood there. You know, he says, oh, Ada got you pretty good, but I don't know. And I was almost wondering if Coulson's was answering. If you go back and you listen to Coulson's responses, you can read them two ways. The first way is he and May know each other, and so he's just, you know, he's just being the way he always is, but he's not really answering questions because it's like, well, May kind of already knows the stuff. The second way is he's purposely avoiding saying stuff.
I get this weird feeling that he knows, that he has a feeling about this not being May.
The little robot detector in his arm is going, boop, 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 boop.
You know what? You might not be wrong.
Yeah.
She even made a comment about that. I have one of those too.
Oh, no, Ada said that actually. Is she?
Yeah, that's what I mean, Ada.
Oh, well, I thought that was because, you know, he hit her really hard with his bionic hand, and then so she...
He did, but...
And then she struck it back.
It might have something to do with it. I don't know. Yeah. That's stretching it a little bit, but I don't know. His arm's pretty cool.
Yeah. I was waiting for him to use a shield or something like that, but maybe later in the season. Shotgun Axe keeps coming out, though. I'm loving this.
Yes, it does.
It's very awesome. I can't call it out anymore. So do we know... It seems like the team's got a couple of bad guys they're trying to deal with. And I think, as I mentioned earlier, with the Superior, I think there's more bad guys than we really know about. I mean, I think you've got the Watchdogs and Centered in a Deer kind of coming at one angle, kind of a public angle, with a mysterious benefactor above them. You've got Radcliffe coming at them in a very hidden angle with May on the inside, with the May LMD on the inside. So, you know, that's the thing that I'm really concerned about. You know, that's gonna affect people. And basically, the way it was teased at the end of the episode, it sounds like May or the Coulson and the Maybot are gonna get busy.
Yeah, might hook up.
Yeah, they're having some wine, eating a little golden dragon. So,
well, you know, those LMDs, they have many functions.
they're what was Data's?
Fully functional.
Yeah, that was what it is. Right. Okay. All right. So, number of references in this episode. This, by far, I think this is the most reference I've ever mentioned on any of our Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files episodes.
All right. Let's list them.
All right. So Simmons refers to the director, to Burroughs, as the director's, quote, little Smithers, which
that's awesome.
Obviously Simpsons reference there.
Now, I'm going to start using that.
Call somebody a little Smithers.
Yeah. Oh. I have a couple people in mind.
Yeah, I could. Yep, I could do that too. That's good. Number of references to different films. So let me just run down through these. So we had most of these were by Mac referencing the impending Murderbot, Killbot attack, the robot apocalypse. The oh my gosh, have you not seen any movies from the 80s? So he mentioned Johnny Five, which is from Short Circuit. Roy Batty, which is from Blade Runner. Johnny Five wasn't really a murder robot or anything like that. He just kind of went a little haywire, but I don't think he hurt anybody. Roy Batty, obviously, Nexus 7 or Nexus 6 robot that, you know, killed people. He referred to Ada as the beautiful weird science sex bot. And we found out that Radcliffe, in fact, has not had sex with her. They're just good friends, which.
Yeah, that's what he said.
What a waste.
What would you little maniacs like to do first?
Mac mentions The Lawnmower Man, which is a really horrible, horrible film. early computer graphics, it was kind of horrible based on a Stephen King film. But this guy basically inserts himself into a computer. Terminator, obviously. And then Maximum Overdrive got referenced when Ada took over the Quinjet and had it flying by itself. That is another Stephen King film that had semi-trucks that were possessed and could come alive on their own. And then Chopping Mall, which if you haven't seen it, a great B film from the early 80s about, as Max says, three murder bots that are loose in a shopping mall. Fitz was looking at Ada's head and mentioned how much like a child she was. And I did not catch this the first time, but Max says, small wonder. Small Wonder was a television show from the 80s about Vicky, who was a little girl robot made by this inventor and brought into the family. And so it was the mom, the dad, the son, and then this robot girl that they tried to pass off as their daughter. But, of course, she was completely awkward and everybody thought she was just really weird. But nobody knew she really was a robot except for the people in the family.
And the series finale is when she took out the whole family. Is that how that...
I don't recall that. No, I don't think that was it.
Maybe I'm thinking of something else. Okay.
Yeah. and then there was reference to Simmons being kidnapped three times, twice on this planet, which Mace was very shocked by. They also referenced all the times that they get hacked. S.H.I.E.L.D. gets hacked, which Coulson says, yeah, at least once a year. That was very, you know, both those I thought were very self-referential, which is also very strange for this series. And then did you catch the Oregon Trail reference?
Yes.
So as Fitz is setting up the Apple IIe's, that was my first computer, to be their offline system, he's got these big kids. Those are called floppy disks. They were 5 1/4 floppy disks, and that's how we got our information. And if you were lucky, you could load a game within like 2 minutes. And the first disc he throws away when he's looking for the one to insert was the Oregon Trail. Too bad.
Love that game.
You have dysentery and have died. Now,
as a side note, you can buy the Oregon Trail as an actual card game now.
Oh, really?
Yes, you can. Yeah.
I think you can get it on your iPhone too, probably. So
You can. Yeah, probably.
Yeah, but yeah. A card game. Wow, that's cool. Now, I did just want to mention a bunch of killer murder bots that Mac did not mention, just really quickly. And these include Ex Machina's Ava. Very, very similar to Ada. I think they share a lot. And so referencing that would probably be something they didn't want to do. Ultron, obviously. Ed 209 from the RoboCop film. HAL 9000 from 2001. Maximilian from The Black Hole. Hector from Saturn 3 the Charlie's Angel lady, Farrah Fawcett.
Oh, yeah.
And Kirk Douglas, I think, was the evil scientist that invented Hector. Eve 8 from Eve of Destruction. Really good, cheesy robot film. The Fembots, of course, from The Bionic Woman.
And Austin Powers.
And Austin Powers, right. The robots from the Simon Pegg film, The World's End. Westworld, of course. And then Ash Bishop, Call, and David and all from the Aliens franchise films. So I'm sure Mac knows all of these. I'm not saying he doesn't. I'm just saying he didn't get these in, and they're long history.
A lot of LMDs, episodes left in this season.
Well, I may just have ruined the rest of the season for us. All right, well, we'll have to...
No. We'll watch for them. It's like a scavenger hunt.
Scavenger hunt. Okay, you get a free space in the middle. We'll set up a bingo card. Bingo! All right. So, well, Josh, a lot of great stuff. I feel like we really scratched the surface, but as you said, a lot of LMD stuff to discuss over the next you know, many weeks here. So that's all. Yes. Even though that's all we've got for this week's episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, there is a lot more LMD discussion we can do.
And you know what? We would love to hear from you guys. What else did you catch or think about while you were watching that? So let us know. We want to hear from you. If you enjoyed us talking about it and enjoyed this episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., leave us some feedback on iTunes. If you want to contact us about anything else you saw in this episode, continue to the discussion. Send us an email, shield@randomchatter.com, or you know, go over to Twitter. We can have a little conversation there, @AgentsPodcast, or go to their Facebook page, facebook.com/AgentsPodcast.
And you can also check out the other shows that Josh and I host, including Green Justice, an Arrow podcast, and Scarlet Velocity, a Flash podcast. Those will be returning in about 2 weeks, I think, when those shows come back on the CW. You can find them at randomchatter.com. You can also check out our special that we did last week for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Slingshot, which was a online webisode, a set of webisodes, what was it, 6 episodes, focusing on Yo-Yo, that took place between season 3 and season 4. You can find all these shows, like I said, at randomchatter.com and also in the iTunes store and through Stitcher for Android or iOS. And also, if you're enjoying the podcast, please feel free to mention us to your friends, post about us on message boards, tweet us to, you know, whoever you would like to. So we would really appreciate that. So for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, this is Jay.
And this is Josh.
Signing off from LMD7. This podcast is not endorsed by ABC Television or Marvel Entertainment. The official website for Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. can be found at www.agentsofshield.com. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and related elements are copyright Marvel Entertainment, LLC.
Transmission terminated.